In deze podcast, mede mogelijk gemaakt door AstraZeneca en BeiGene, spreekt wetenschapsjournalist Judith Cohen met professor Dr. Stefan Stilgenbauer van de Universiteit Ulm in Duitsland over de huidige eerste lijns behandelopties voor patiënten met CLL. Aan bod komen de belangrijkste punten van de meest recente richtlijnupdates en zijn ervaring met de behandeling van CLL-patiënten.
So in this podcast, I have the honor of speaking with CLL expert Stefan Stilgenbauer from the Department of Internal Medicine Hematology at the University of Ulm in Germany. A warm welcome to you, Stefan.
Yes, thank you very much, Judith.
I'm very happy to have you here in the podcast where we will be talking about the current treatment options for CLL. Just a quick bit of context for why we feel it's important to speak with you, the German expert on CLL, about treatment options on CLL, us coming from the Netherlands. CLL, chronic lymphatic leukemia, is one of the most prevalent leukemias in the Netherlands as well, with approximately between 600 to about 1,000 new cases each year. And the rapid developments in diagnostics and treatment options, well, they really ask for a state-of-the-art overview of the current treatment paradigms and also an insight into the similarities and differences of all treatment options. Now, Professor Stilgenbauer, you recently presented such a state-of-the-art overview at the ASH annual meeting at the end of 2024. So we're really excited and very happy to have you speak to us today about your experiences in treating CLL and also talking a little bit more about the key points of the most recent guideline updates. So just for a little bit more background, in the Netherlands, we also had a recent update of the treatment guidelines for CLL, but there appear to be some differences from the German guidelines. The main difference probably being that in the Netherlands, chemoimmunotherapy forms the standard of first-line therapy still, whereas in Germany, and this is what we will be talking to you about, there is a larger role for targeted therapy. Treatment of chronic lymphocytic leukemia has been revolutionized with the coming of the BTK and BCL2 inhibitors. And also the Dutch guidelines, for some good reasons, do not differentiate between the BTKIs yet, whereas you have a different experience. So we're very keen to hear more from you about this. At the ASH annual meeting at the ending of 2024, you presented two main treatment paradigms for the frontline treatment of CLL, one being the continuous BTK inhibitor monotherapy and the other being the fixed duration combinations of BCL2 inhibitors with either CD20 or BTK inhibitors. Can you share with us a little bit more about your experiences with these different treatment paradigms? And maybe also zoom in a little bit more on the available evidence, which really brought forth these different treatment paradigms.
It's a great pleasure indeed talking to you today about these topics. And indeed, we had the honor of giving this ASH educational talk in December last year in San Diego. Being invited to this is obviously a great honor. And we tried to summarize our current evidence with regard to frontline treatment in different patient populations. So, as you say, treatment has been revolutionized in CLL based on a better disease understanding. We know that BTK, Bruton's tyrosine kinase, and BCL2, B-cell lymphoma, and leukemia 2 are critical for the biology of the disease. They are driving the disease. They are so-called cancer drivers. And therefore, one could foresee that there are very valuable treatment targets when it comes, to fighting this type of leukemia. Now, several of these molecules have been developed, several in particular for targeting BTK. We had the first generation inhibitor ibrutinib, then the second generation BTK inhibitors acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib, and further ones are in development. For BCL2, we have licensed venetoclax. which can be used in particular together with CD20 antibodies such as rituximab and obinutuzumab. Now, the important point is that indeed, both types of treatment approaches, either continuous BTK inhibitor treatment, as well as time-limited venetoclax-based treatment, have shown superiority with regard to progression-free survival, really universally in all trials against chemoimmunotherapy. And in some trials, actually, even overall survival benefits. And this is why these treatment options are currently being favored in many national guidelines and also in the ESMO guidelines, in the guidelines of the European Society of Medical Oncology. This evidence from various phase three trials leading to recommendations in treatment guidelines is also reflective of my own personal experience when it comes to everyday patient care.
Because how long have you already been working with these treatment paradigms? So how long do you have experience already with these two types of treatment for CLL, frontline treatment?
So the development of BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitors obviously came through clinical trials. And in clinical trials, we have experience in Europe, or in particular also in Germany, with these agents for longer than 10 years now. This was when the first trials were started, in particular in the relapsed refractory setting, when chemoimmunotherapy failed. And the first striking observation that we made there, paving the way for further development of these agents, was that even in patients who have failed multiple lines of chemoimmunotherapy or who had high-risk biological features, benefited from these novel targeted treatment approaches very much. And this obviously paved the way for further development of these agents also in earlier lines of treatment.
So you mentioned that these two treatment paradigms showed superiority in clinical trials. I believe you mean superiority against the chemoimmunotherapy, or did you mean something different?
Indeed, all of these treatment approaches with ibrutinib, with acalabrutinib, and with zanubrutinib as BTK inhibitors, and with venetoclax, either combined with obinutuzumab as an antibody, or with a BTK inhibitor such as ibrutinib, or more lately with acalabrutinib, all of these have been shown to be superior as compared to various chemoimmunotherapy regimens with regard to progression-free survival. With regard to progression-free survival in different treatment, in different populations of patients, so unfit patients, fit patients, young patients, old patients, so across all of these subgroups, actually various treatment approaches with these targeted agents have been better than chemoimmunotherapy with regard to progression-free survival. And as I said, most importantly, in some trials, even with regard to overall survival.
But this is, I think, a very important topic, because in some trials, there was the OS, the overall survival, that also showed more benefits with these new treatment paradigms with targeted therapy. A number of these studies only have PFS as their significant primary outcome that was reached. If you would have a new patient with CLL that was coming to you for treatment, what would you find based on the literature or the evidence that's available to be the most relevant factor for initiating therapy at this time point? Would you choose for long-term survival changes, or would you rather focus on staying progression-free on the shorter term?
Right. So overall survival, or improving overall survival, is obviously the ultimate goal. You want patients to live longer, possibly being cured of CLL, because it is a disease of the elderly. And if patients die of other causes, free or at least with control of the CLL, this is kind of a functional cure for the patient, isn't it? And this is why overall survival improvement over chemoimmunotherapy is the ultimate goal. Well, however, this is difficult to achieve because many trials allowed crossover either within the trial or upon progression after chemoimmunotherapy, because these targeted treatments were available in the relapse setting as a licensed therapy off study. So this kind of functional crossover obviously diluted any overall survival effect that we could see in these randomized trials. Nevertheless, as I said, in some trials, such as ECOG 1912, such as GLOW, such as FLAIR, such as AMPLIFY, we have seen overall survival, significant overall survival benefits of clinical, very great benefit to the patient. Let alone next to overall survival, even a dramatic improvement in progression-free survival can be very meaningful for the patient, because if you have a longer PFS, that means that your second-line treatment is delayed, is much later than after chemoimmunotherapy, which obviously also offers a benefit for the patient. Secondly, also these targeted treatments are better tolerated as compared to chemoimmunotherapy, in particular with regard to severe side effects, such as neutropenia, such as infections, and in some instances, it is already proven that long-term effects such as secondary cancers are increased with prior chemotherapy. So many of these tolerability issues also speak in favor of targeted therapy.
And so there's the two paradigms, the continuous BTK inhibitor monotherapy or the time-limited BCL2 inhibitor-based combination treatment. Is there a preference for one over the other, or does that depend on patient characteristics? What is your experience with that?
Yes, absolutely. These two paradigms, continuous BTK inhibitor monotherapy or time-limited venetoclax-based treatment, either combined with a CD20 antibody or with a BTK inhibitor in a time-limited fashion, these two treatment paradigms have not been compared head-to-head, or at least we don't have data from trials comparing these two options head-to-head yet. Therefore, if we like it or not, in everyday practice, we have to base our treatment decisions on cross-trial comparisons of these two treatment paradigms, because they have been compared in separate trials against chemoimmunotherapy. However, what we know from various types of analyses is that there are particular disease profiles, in particular genetic characteristics, and particular patient profiles, so comorbidities, coexisting conditions, and co-medications, that either make a patient particularly suited for a venetoclax-based time-limited treatment or for continuous BTK inhibitor therapy. So we have quite reliable data sets available, as I said, based on cross-trial comparisons, but nevertheless with quite good evidence to select particular treatment choices.
Yep. So if I could summarize you correctly, the decision to choose between either two treatment paradigms with targeted therapy basically depends now on genetic subgroups of the disease and coexisting conditions of the patient. Is it always clear for the healthcare professional which direction to go in?
Well, as always, you know, medicine is not a black and white business. It's always a grayscale. There are always nuances, and individualization of treatment is obviously very important. Nevertheless, we have characteristics. Maybe let's focus on the genetics first. We know that 17p deletion and or TP53 mutation is a very bad thing to have, in particular with chemoimmunotherapy. But also with venetoclax-based treatment, we know that PFS and also OS can be shorter with this abnormality. Therefore, these patients with a 17p deletion and or TP53 mutation are the prime candidates for continuous BTK inhibitor therapy. On the other hand, patients without this abnormality and with mutated IGHV genes have a very good prognosis, achieve very long responses, very long PFS and OS, also with time-limited treatments. Therefore, in these patients, we prefer a time-limited venetoclax-based approach. And the middle group is the group with unmutated IGHV, but in the absence of 17p deletion and or TP53 mutation. In these patients, we have a somewhat longer PFS, probably with continuous BTK inhibitor therapy, but we can retreat these patients with time-limited venetoclax-based approaches, so that for this subgroup of patients, both targeted treatment paradigms are equally valid. In turn, What also helps us differentiating are patient characteristics. With the venetoclax-based treatments, we have a somewhat more cumbersome treatment initiation. We must monitor and institute prophylactic measures to prevent tumor lysis syndrome with frequent laboratory testing and co-medications. So in patients with reduced renal function, venetoclax-based treatments are less good an option. On the other hand, we know that with BTK inhibitors, cardiac coexisting conditions and things like anticoagulation are leading to an increased proportion of AEs. Therefore, these patients are less good candidates for BTK inhibitors. So the patient profile also helps us differentiating, and we integrate all this into a matrix, making a best possible treatment decision for each individual patient.
Yeah, well, that really sounds like precision medicine quite at an in-depth level. You were just hinting a little bit about intolerance or toxicity as well. So that's something that I would like to hear your experiences with also, especially with regard to the frontline CLL treatment with targeted therapy. How do you handle intolerance or handle disease progression for that matter? Would you rather switch to a dose modification, or would you rather step up to a second generation BTK inhibitor because, well, they are available as well? What are your thoughts on that?
So with regard to intolerance, with venetoclax-based treatments, we do not, have much choice. If a patient is not a good candidate for a venetoclax-based treatment or has intolerable AEs, we have to switch to another treatment paradigm, i.e. a BTK inhibitor. With BTK inhibitors, we have a range of options. Ibrutinib was the first one being licensed, but we know from head-to-head comparative trials in the relapsed refractory setting that acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib are better tolerated than ibrutinib and achieve at least the same efficacy. Therefore, acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib are, by extrapolation, also the preferred frontline treatment options for our patients due to that better tolerability.
And we call those the second generation BTK inhibitors, right?
BTK inhibitors, indeed. Acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib as second generation BTK inhibitors can be used in case a patient was on ibrutinib but developed side effects that were not tolerable for the patient. The preference today, however, is to institute frontline treatment, preferably with acalabrutinib or zanubrutinib based on their better tolerability profile.
So to start off with when you're initiating the therapy. Yeah. And what happens, because you just mentioned that if you start with time-limited BCL2 inhibitor-based therapy, that if there's a problem there, either being toxicity or disease progression, that you have to switch to a different treatment paradigm. How is that for the patients that started on a treatment paradigm with continuous BTK inhibitor monotherapy, either with a first or a second generation BTK inhibitor? What are their options if there's disease progression or intolerance to the therapy?
With continuous BTK inhibitor treatment, we have to differentiate between two different modes of failure that usually occur after some prolonged period time on treatment. And the two different modes of failure are either intolerance, so that there are adverse events that are not tolerable to the patient. We can then switch from ibrutinib to the better tolerated second generation BTK inhibitors, such as acalabrutinib or zanubrutinib. Or if also these are not well tolerated, we can switch to a venetoclax-based treatment option. Nevertheless, I think that this switch to the other treatment paradigm should only be done if there's true intolerance of treatment, because these BTK inhibitor type treatments are very valuable, very efficacious treatment modalities that shouldn't be thrown away prematurely. So every effort should be made by, you know, supportive therapy, by dose reductions which are possible, or as I said, switching from a first generation to second generation BTK inhibitors to maintain patients on this valuable treatment paradigm.
So what should the sequential treatment be with either treatment paradigm if disease progression occurs?
Right. We have more and more patients today who started on one of those targeted treatment paradigms. After time-limited venetoclax-based treatment, we basically have two options. In particular, if response duration was long, and this is somewhat arbitrarily defined by 2 to 3 to 4 years or longer, then we can retreat with a venetoclax-based regimen because we had good treatment tolerability and good treatment benefit. So we can use that bullet, if you wish, a second time. If response duration was shorter, usually it is recommended to switch to a BTK inhibitor. Now, when there's failure of BTK inhibitor treatment due to intolerance, we can switch from first to second generation, or we also have to switch to venetoclax-based treatment. Similarly, when there is disease progression on this continuous BTK inhibitor therapy, we have to switch to another treatment paradigm, which usually is a venetoclax-based treatment approach, mostly combined with a CD20 antibody.
So you've spoken a lot about the scientific evidence for the treatment paradigms and also for first and second generation BTK inhibitors. I would just like to hear from you how that translates into towards clinical practice. So do you also have clinical experience with the newer generation or the second generation BTK inhibitors? What are the differences you saw as opposed to starting off or initiating therapy with first generation BTK inhibitor?
Well, overall, clinical experience is reflective of what we have seen in the trials with better tolerability of the second generation BTK inhibitors. Nevertheless, also here, the picture is not black and white. We know that fortunately with all these targeted treatments, they are usually, you know, well tolerated. The difference in AEs is usually in the, you know, single digit percent range. So it takes quite a number of patients, even in clinical trials, to cull out these differences. Nevertheless, since the evidence is pretty clear from these large clinical trials and is reflected in personal experience in everyday treatment, the preferred options are the better tolerated second generation BTK inhibitors.
With all the new or the rapid developed new treatment options for the frontline treatment of CLL, is there still an unmet need? Is there still something to wish for?
There's always room to do better, I think, in medicine. We clearly have made dramatic progress for the benefit of our patients with these targeted treatment approaches based on BCL2 and BTK inhibitors. Nevertheless, some patients still tolerate this treatment not terribly well. So better tolerance could still be a goal to develop these things further. More and more today, since these agents are used more widely, we see patients failing both treatment paradigms, either covalent BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitors. Fortunately so, novel agents are in development, non-covalent BTK inhibitors that can be used in patients who have failed covalent BTK inhibitors. Other agents are still more experimental and developed in clinical trials, such as BTK degraders that target the BTK molecule as an important treatment paradigm in a very different fashion, and other issues such as, you know, bispecific antibodies or CAR T cells that use the immune system of the body to fight the leukemia. So multiple developments are underway, and I think the future looks very bright for our patients with CLL with all these new developments.
That sounds excellent. Is it already being characterized which type of patients or subgroups of patients are more prone to fail both treatment paradigms with targeted therapy?
Well, we do have evidence that obviously treatment adherence is very important. So patients who are elderly or who have these comorbidities that make the occurrence of AEs more likely, obviously cannot withstand these treatments so well and may lead to premature termination of these treatments. We also know that genetic characteristics are linked to outcome also with BTK inhibitors and BCL2 inhibitors, although outcome is much better as compared to chemoimmunotherapy, in particular for patients with unmutated IGHV. Still, we know that unmutated IGHV carries some prognostic impact also with these targeted agents, and 17p deletion and or TP53 mutation, as I said before, is still used to guide treatment in favor of a BTK inhibitor as compared to BCL2 inhibitor, where outcome is inferior.
Could I invite you, Professor Stilgenbauer, to help summarize all this important information that we just gave our listeners? What is the most important or the most, what are the most relevant factors of the treatment options for CLL at this time point?
Well, importantly, we do have a choice. We do have a choice among excellent treatment options. There is overwhelming evidence from phase 3 clinical trials that targeted treatment is superior with regard to progression-free survival and in some instances even with regard to overall survival as compared to chemoimmunotherapy. So to me, and in most national guidelines and also in the ESMO guidelines, targeted treatment options with BTK inhibitor or BCL2 inhibitor-based treatment are preferred over chemoimmunotherapy. When it comes to differentiating between the two treatment paradigms, we have patient characteristics such as renal or cardiac comorbidities and co-medications, as well as genetic disease factors such as unmutated IGHV or 17p deletion with or without TP53 mutation that define a matrix that helps us decide which treatment option is best for each individual patient. But for all of our patients, these targeted treatment options offer great benefit and help improve their outcome also in the long term.
That's a very positive outlook. Thank you so much, Stefan Stilgenbauer, for talking to us a little bit more about the frontline treatment of CLL.
Thank you very much, Judith. It was a great pleasure and looking forward to other opportunities again.
Bent u geïnteresseerd in meer podcasts? Deze zijn te vinden op de website www.oncologie.nu. Heeft u zelf een onderwerp of onderzoek dat besproken kan worden in een podcast? Mail het naar info@uitgeverij-jaap.nl.